Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast today is, wait, what's today, Thursday?
Yeah.
The 30th, right? 30 is November. Yep. 30, yep. What is that shit they say?
November,
yeah, April, what's that one?
30 days past September, April, June, and November.
What is it? What about the...
I'm 41.
So tomorrow is December 1st.
Yeah, December 1st. That's how come I knew
Which
the date.
Which is crazy.
It's over, B. It's over, La.
It's a wrap.
Yeah. Peace to Chris Lighty. That's what we start saying to each other. It's over, La. It's over, love.
I really don't know how this year went by that fast.
It's Christmas. The tree lighting was tonight?
Yesterday,
right?
Yesterday. Yeah, I need to put my tree up this weekend. The tree lighting was yesterday.
Damn. It's a wrap. You done shopping yet, bro?
Shit.
What?
I mean, listen, man. I'll probably get something for my nephews. Send that down to them, man. But my kids is...
They good. Y'all all right.
I think 20 and 14, man. Ain't nobody doing all that tree shit, man. All that Christmas present. All
you
that.
Know.
I mean, look.
Just for the spirit.
I do. For years, what I would do was, I didn't wrap anything. I would just wait till they went to sleep.
Okay.
And I would put their gifts under the tree.
Unwrapped.
Yeah, unwrapped.
Okay.
And
but then
the
ain't working out with an adult now.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, it's really just, you know, it's Jordan. Like, right. She's 14 going on, you know, 43.
Right,
like,
right.
We'll be,
basically.
Yeah, you ain't buying her no Barbies.
Yeah, like, yeah. She, you know, so it's not really the same sort of vibe, the same sort of energy.
Yeah.
We'll probably do one, you know, one, we usually do one all-day shopping mall day.
Right.
Okay, yeah, I remember that. You're talking about that. Yeah, the whole mall
get
thing.
Get to the mall early and just lock it down.
And just get it.
We
get
eating
your,
lunch.
Yeah,
eating
the
dinner,
whole shit. We here.
We here.
Right. Until
we
go home.
For today.
Yeah.
I'm walking around. Probably
yeah.
Get about 24,000, 25,000 steps in.
On the Fitbit?
Yeah. So, but yeah, we don't really do too much.
How was Thanksgiving for everybody?
I was just telling Sean before we started taping, I can't believe it was already a week ago. I feel like it was just a
literally
couple of
days it was a
ago.
Week ago today, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like it was just a couple of days ago. Thanksgiving was cool. I was trying to do too much because I went to Greg's family's house, which is all the way out in Babylon, and had dinner here in Harlem. So like,
his not where he live at, but his family.
Yeah,
they
like went out to his parents' house, then came back for dinner at Rabia's house
the same day.
Yeah. But we just went out there, like, real quick. Well, what happened was...
You went to Babylon real quick.
Well, that's what I was thinking in my head. So, Greg's dad had been in the hospital, so he didn't come home till Tuesday. So, I said to Greg on Wednesday, if you want, because I was making sides for a bee, I was like, I'll make you guys some sides, bring them out there tomorrow, because we're not eating dinner before 5. And he was like, okay, cool. I was like, you just deal with a protein. Because he had been telling me, like, this person's not coming, it's just going to be us, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I get out there and it's like a house full. Like the aunt that wasn't supposed to be coming
was
came,
there,
you know,
with her brood.
Niggas was cooking, you know, so it's like,
yeah.
I mean, it's
cool. It was
cool.
A thing. It was a
it
thing.
It was a thing. So, I mean, we went out and Cheyenne was here. So Cheyenne was with me. So we stayed for a little while, but then, you know, we had to get back because we had our own dinner. But I just realized, like, I really wasn't thinking clearly when I was like, yeah, I'm going to run some food out there. But anyway, but Thanksgiving was cool. The Saturday after Thanksgiving, me, Mom, Eric...
He's
good, you know. He's
hey, Miss E, I'm
one.
Still drinking that Jameson and ginger,
yeah,
bruh.
And
then got on my neck when I ordered that time. We said that was some
remember.
Fruity bullshit. He was like, "Nigga, what the fuck?"
Like some brown,
I think I ordered like sangria or some shit. He was like, "Nigga, what?" You gonna get your ass a whiskey up in your sister?
So yeah, we last year we like randomly just had a bunch of people come by the house on Saturday, but no more cooking. Like I didn't want to cook anymore, so I was like, well, we'll just do desserts and drinks. So we did it again this year. It was mostly people like in Harlem. My mom had a bunch of her friends come over and stuff. So for that reason, because I had people in on Saturday, like Thanksgiving just felt really long. Like it felt like the whole
long,
weekend because I was hosting that day too.
Yeah. So you basically had two Thanksgivings.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I was in Atlanta from, when did I go to Atlanta? That weekend before. I think it's Saturday night. Yeah, that Saturday night, I went to Atlanta working with Missy. I had Missy with Bangladesh.
Okay. Like, is this album ever going to come, bro?
Yeah, it's coming 18. It's coming 18. So we worked. Then I ended up going out Tuesday night to a concert. Well, a show, I should say. Not a concert, a show. Then a party. The party turned out to be crazy lit.
Uh-huh.
Like,
in Atlanta.
Yeah, unexpected. I was like, this shit crazy. It was packed. It was crazy. Then I left Wednesday, came home. Thanksgiving was obviously Thursday.
Right.
Hung out at my godparents' house the whole day. That was real cool. Friday, came to the city in the evening, went to see Daniel Caesar.
Right. Oh, speaking of which, congratulations to friend of the show, Joe Zinn.
Yeah.
He engaged to, he proposed to his girl, his longtime girlfriend,
at
Gina,
the show.
At the show during Get You.
Yeah, during Get You.
And so he is now a man who is engaged to be married.
All right, bless you.
We wish you all the best.
Bless you, Joseph.
Yeah.
Yes, I did that. Then went around the corner to the Originals party.
Okay.
Because it was, you know, Highline 17th, Originals was on 12th Street.
And we were downtown, actually, because Friday was Cheyenne's birthday, and we were actually...
Oh, she should have came through.
Well, we were downtown, and I was like, oh, the Originals party is right now. But I might have gone through if it was me, Dolo. I didn't know if her and, like, her line sisters would want to do the Originals. They're 30. They're, like, 31, 32.
Nah,
you know what
I mean?
I wasn't sure.
Because that's the thing about the Originals party. For those who know, there's a party in New York called the Originals that they do randomly. Like,
It's not even quarterly, it just pops up.
But under during the holidays, they usually do one Black Friday, and then they'll do another one at the last Friday of December. But it's five DJs. It's D-Nice, Clark Kent, Tony Touch, Rich Medina, and Stretch Armstrong. Mm-hmm. So that's the cool thing why Cheyenne would have had a good time, because obviously you got five guys that play five different ways.
Right.
So, yeah, like, you know, Stretch plays, like, kind of hardcore, more obscure hip hop. Derek is definitely more commercial.
Right.
You know, Rich is more like housey. So there's a variety of music that's played throughout the night. So just for future, they would have fun, because at some point they would have played records that they like.
Right.
So I did that. So I was going ham, B.
You always going ham.
I know, right?
Oh, I don't know where you get. I literally don't know where you get the energy at all.
Yo,
I really don't know. I don't know how you'd be like riding your bike all over the place and going to work and traveling out of town and going to parties. I'd be sleepy. I don't know. You'd be outside. I'd be sleepy.
I'm
on the couch like.
No. I've definitely perfected the disco nap.
Okay.
The disco nap is key.
I don't nap well at all. I'm a horrible napper.
The disco nap. If you're going out, if you try to get back home, if you're outside during the day,
right?
Try to get back home by like 5-ish.
Yeah.
Catch that disco nap 6 to 8, and then you good money.
Right. Yeah, I'm that person who'll be like, I'm going to take a nap, and then I'm going to cancel on everybody, because I would rather.
So your nap will just extend.
It'll just extend.
Yeah.
What about you? I know you had 82 people at the house.
Oh, yeah, you had a house full of folks.
Y'all stay hosting.
Yeah you had a banquet.
Gave out a wall. Yeah, we had quite a few folks. Justin came home.
How's the boy doing?
good. Everything was good, man. We had a good time.
What is he, junior now?
He's junior.
Junior this year, yeah. And, okay.
The hardest thing was that Mona was out on the road.
With
the first couple dates, which meant they pulled in like Thanksgiving morning.
Oh, damn. Wow. So you cooked everything?
And, like, I did. We had already prepped everything.
Okay.
Everything was, turkeys were brined, everything was good.
Did you fry?
We always do fried in the bake. We do a small fried turkey, probably about 15, 14 pounds.
Mm. Okay.
And then we do a big, like 22, 24 pound. Baked turkey.
Okay, like the original recipe, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you know, all of the other shit, you know, ham.
Yeah, you do the ham still,
yeah. Nigga. Why would I not do it? Everybody, you know, it's always funny. Don't nobody eat no pork,
but the ham be
always gone.
Yeah.
Ribs don't never last through the barbecue. Ham always
for you lack of pork eaters.
We don't eat no pig, I don't eat no swine.
The ribs flying off the shelf.
You know, so any
pork chops gone.
Exactly. we had a great time, man. It was
good.
It was good. Lots of family, lots of love. Yeah. And I enjoyed it. I mean, it's weird now because the kids are not really kids.
They're
anymore.
Not kids. Yeah, Justin's right. an adult.
Yeah, I mean, you like my nephews. Yeah, like my nephews, they come home from, you know, they're 21, 22.
Yeah,
you know, they can drink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's so like, do they
do they slide out after dinner?
I'm about to say, because I know when I was a youngster, nah. like that Thursday, Thanksgiving
that
night, there'd be a lot of shit popping
up. Oh, no, college movies?
Yeah! Parties
after
lit.
Dinner, bye.
Parties
popping. Well, Justin had his girlfriend with him.
Okay.
Oh, shit. Yeah,
you left that out. Now, what the girl like? What's she like now? What's she like?
She's a nice
little gal?
Yeah, you know.
Okay.
How people let her come home for Thanksgiving?
I don't think she goes home for Thanksgiving. Like, a lot of kids, they were telling me, a lot of kids don't go home for Thanksgiving because
it's too expensive.
It's too expensive. Yes, okay. And when they live that far away, you kind of are only going for like 2 days.
Right.
So, and you're going to be going a couple weeks from Christmas anyway.
Yeah, so that's, so she came. It was great. And then they was out like that following day.
Okay.
Like, they went to the city. They went shopping. They was out. So,
good.
You know, it was cool. Good vibe. You know, Mona put her to work, man.
Well,
you know, come on down here now, gal.
Like in Master of None. You cool me and bread, plate cornbread.
All that.
I actually binge watched that over Thanksgiving. I did both seasons. And it's interesting, like, when you watch both seasons together, you realize it's not linear at all.
Right.
Like, you watched it?
I haven't watched it yet.
Okay, you watched both seasons?
Mm-hmm.
So, there was a part when Dev had a girlfriend, his first girlfriend in the first season. And he didn't tell his parents that he had a girlfriend.
Right.
They were living together, and he didn't tell her. And so it was a whole thing, right? But then in the Thanksgiving thing episode, which is in the second season, there's a little part when Dev and Denise are in upstairs. They grown.
Mm-hmm.
And Denise says, "Did you tell your parents that you and Rachel live together?" And he's like, "Nah."
Yeah.
He said, "Did you tell Rachel that? Do you have a girlfriend?" So he's like, "Nah." And he's like, "So stupid." But it was like she was talking about that,
but there were two
separate seasons. So
This
is very interesting. If you watch them all together, it kind of is doing It's kind of bouncing back and forth.
Kind of like Atlanta.
Yeah.
Because Atlanta wasn't really
Linda. Yeah. So I highly recommend you watch.
I'm going to watch it. I'm so excited for Christmas holidays. I'm unplugging from everything.
In the zone now.
Yeah, because last year this time I was on promo and
oh yeah, that's right. You was going hard.
Yeah, I was like in Europe right now.
Yeah, that's right. You was overseas.
So I'm like excited just to sit around from home.
Hey, so let's talk about, since I brought up Netflix, let's talk about She's Gotta Have It.
Which I haven't watched yet.
Oh, you ain't watched it?
We can talk about it, though, because I've seen enough people talk about it. But here's the thing. No, let's talk about it.
You niggas ain't done watching.
Only because, I've seen the conversation around it. She's Gotta Have It is my least favorite Spike Lee movie. So
really?
I just really wasn't.
Why is that?
It might be because I was so young when it came out. Maybe I do need to watch it again. It just didn't resonate with me.
Didn't connect.
I mean, the Mars Blackman character really only got to me through the fucking Jordan commercials. And that's what I really think it was, because it was his earliest one. It was his first one. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was too young.
It was like
86.
Yeah, it was gummer.
I think when I did see it, I was too young, and it just didn't do it for me. And also, it's like, I was surprised that they were turning it into a series now.
Mm.
I mean, granted, the whole sex positive thing and everything is very timely, like the independence of Nola and all that other stuff. But I'm also just like, it's so old to revive. Like,
That was one of the issues that I had with it, and I saw the people talking about it online too. It's like the sex positive thing in 1986 compared to 2017 is not as big a deal.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you know, people are doing what they do, and yeah, she had these three guys that she was dealing with, it's four people, because they bring a girl into the new one. She has a woman lover at times as well. But it's not like, oh my God, she's a hoe, like it was back then. It's like, man, you know,
it's just not
a cute girl, she's single, she's living in Brooklyn, she's having some fun with herself, you know what I'm saying? Like,
There's a ton of girls on Twitter with podcasts who do that exactly.
This is my point. You can find that anywhere.
I think that if we looked at the 30-year gap between when that movie came out and now, the world has shifted so drastically, probably more than any other 30-year gap that right. you could take.
Right, right.
Right, like, it's a massive, massive difference mm-hmm. in culture and tone and how we talk and how we deal, how we view sex, how we view, you know, women and sex. Right. It's just very different.
Yeah, yeah.
I just didn't watch it because, to be perfectly honest, you know, I love Spike, you know, I love his spirit, right? But, like... Right. I'm just not, I haven't really enjoyed anything he's made in a very long time. Well, you know what I'm saying? So I'm not, like, it didn't feed a thirst for me to go and, yeah. and quench.
And I see people binge watching it.
Yeah, you gotta binge it.
Some people like it. I don't know that I see anybody loving it. And the people I think I do see who like it are younger. Mm. So they're coming at it. Like, this is fresh material. Even if they watched the movie before they watched this, they just watched the movie before they watched this. You know, yeah, so it's like yeah. it's all new to them. But I'm hearing other people say, like, it feels dated. The dialogue is very stiff.
Yeah.
The styling is very, like, what the fuck? You know, so you can't... It seems like that he didn't really update it all the way.
Well, you can tell... Okay, so apparently he only wrote... He wrote the first and last episodes. Okay. And he had other writers come in. But I think even a lot of other writers he had come in are, they're not young. It ain't right. like he had like the Insecure level right. writer. It was like his sister, you know, right, was right, one of the writers right. and his wife was one of the,
right.
so he's a woman in their 50s.
Right.
So what you're getting is what women in their 50s who still live in Brooklyn kind of think young girls are doing.
Right.
But you're not, it's not Insecure because the difference.
Or what we were doing back then, or what, like.
Trying to translate that yeah. to like, what well, exactly, obviously with Insecure, you have a room full of 30-year-olds.
Right.
So 30-ish, I right. should say, year olds. So that's where Insecure comes off, obviously, so, you know, legit, because this is what right. young black people in L.A. do. They go to that party, and they go yeah. here, and they run a marathon, and right. you know what I'm saying? Whereas, like I said, you can see in this movie, it's older women projecting they what they think. Oh, I talked to my niece, or I hung out with my, yeah. you know, my cousin, or my, you know, my sister's, you know, my whatever. Like, I'm, right. I hung out with some young people, so I think I got it.
Right,
that's
right,
what
right.
it kind of feels like. There's 10 episodes. I guess it's 10? Yes, 10 episodes. It was a struggle for me until maybe like episode 4.
Okay.
And then it got...
A struggle, why?
Because of just what you were saying. The dialogue is wild dated.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like the whole vibe. It felt like a Spike joint, and I didn't really want that. It you felt like, it. Yeah, I wanted something newer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like certain things and stuff they're saying, and even the Mars character really irked me because he basically dressed just like the old one.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
He's
yeah.
still wearing the bicycle hat. He still got the Mars name plate. Yeah. He got the Mars name belt. I'm like, when 2017 and is a kid in Brooklyn wearing
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you could have took Mars and made him wear what kids wear now.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? Like a dope hoodie and, you know, some J's. J's is fine because that's right. still there. But, like, it was just, yeah, you know, it was, and there was a lot of, it was homage, a lot of homages to Prince mm-hmm. throughout the series, which I, obviously I get, and I know Prince and Spike had a, you know, a real relationship. But it was, sometimes it was too much. It was and too again, much. It was like, in real life, a 20, because Nola's supposed to be 27.
Right.
In real life, a 27-year-old girl is not playing Prince all the time.
Yeah, no.
They might have a Prince day, might go to a Prince party.
Right, but not in 2017.
She's playing Solange
right.
and SZA
right.
and, you know, Daniel Caesar and,
right.
you know, and Future and Amigos right, and whatever. Right. So, like, it was that was also kind of like, that's, again, that's projecting down.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Prince, you got to play Prince. Like, a 27-year-old girl living in Brooklyn is playing Raspberry Beret.
Right.
She's playing fucking Bad and Bougie.
Right. Well, but, somebody else said that it definitely feels like Spike was saw an opportunity coming off the heels of Insecure mm-hmm. and was trying to chase that.
That's exactly what it is. He's like, oh, they kind of took my shit around with it. I'm going to do my version of it. So, right. I mean, all that being said, I suggest, you know, over the break, check it out.
I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah, you should watch it. You know what I'm saying? But it wasn't, it's not like the best shit ever. I want to also talk about Cam and Mace. So
Christmas came early for all the niggas over 40.
Wow,
niggas like was lit. Real life.
popping.
Niggas was pulling out their Pele Pele's and their Averax jackets, like.
And the wheat Tim's.
Beef and broccoli. Beef and broccoli.
Oversized.
They was like, baby, I told you I should have kept this shit in the closet.
Fitted's coming down
the
hill.
Heavy champion hoodie. Not them shits they sell now.
Yeah,
nah. The big, super.
The original.
Yeah, type. The original.
You can't
noise.
Barely get a coat over the top at of the joint because it's just so fucking thick. So. You know, for those who don't know, I'm sure everybody knows, but Cameron and Mace are both from Harlem. They went to high school together. They played basketball together years ago. Mace was definitely helped Cam get his first deal.
Right.
Because Mace was on, got on first.
But then they were all in Children of the Corn together. They were
in Children of the Corn together before that.
And, L got his deal first.
Yeah, Young L got the deal first, but he was way ahead of the curve, but Young L died mad early, too. Right. But then then they had Children of the Corn, and then Mace got on to be a Puff, and then he helped get Cam on, and Cam acknowledges that, but it's definitely always felt like a little rivalry between the two.
That started, or that came to a head during the Horse and Carriage video.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because Mace did Horse and Carriage for Cam, which... You know, was a smash record. That was a huge record.
Huge.
And
such a great summer record.
Cam, and Mace wouldn't come and shoot the video.
He wanted to get paid. Yeah, he wanted to charge Cam to be in the video.
Yeah, and Cam was like, my nigga, like, we from, you know, the same round the way, and like, you know, God, how could you charge me? And so it just got, that started the funkiness.
Yeah.
And it just kept getting funkier and funkier. So Mace out of the blue right before Thanksgiving, what was it, like Tuesday, Wednesday?
Yeah, but I think I wonder if Mace wasn't encouraged by the fact that
Cam shit,
Cam dropped a mixtape.
Called The Program,
and then Dipset did a reunion concert.
At Hammerstein.
And I wanna say it was like the next day or the day after the concert.
Yeah.
The day after or 2 days after the concert when
Mace dropped his song called Oracle.
Yeah.
Where he's talking all this stuff about Cam and how Cam allegedly fucked his sister, although Cam doesn't have a sister, and you know, a lot of other kind of. It was very Harlem.
Yeah,
it was very like
Harlem Beef does not die.
Specific,
like I'm gonna bring up shit from '87.
Yeah, because so and so from 138th, it was that type of shit.
Yeah.
Like only like people from the area even know what they're talking about. So of course Cam, being the petty nigga that he is, responds and. You know, they kind of go back and forth for two. It was not. I knew it was never going to turn violent.
Right.
You know, it was just kind of like two petty niggas talking shit. But like you said, they both got a little traction out of it. Mace got interviewed. Cam just did Breakfast Club, I think, this morning, right? Or yesterday.
It was this morning.
So, you know, they both got out of it what they wanted.
A lot of people think Mace won this round.
I think Mace does have the better record.
But Cam wins the war because Mace's shit was so ugly in the street. Because Mace had to leave Harlem. Like, the fact that Mace had to leave Harlem at one point and never came back to Harlem.
Never came back.
Right. So the fact that Mace had to leave, like, even no matter how many bars he gets off, niggas from home is like, but you had to leave.
Yeah, but you can't even come back.
Cam is still here.
Cam's around all the time.
Yeah, but it's like you can't even get back. So
fun fact, Mace actually lived in the building I lived in for a heartbeat when he first got on, when I lived on Riverside on the 50th.
I thought that was the spot.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun in that building. But but I mean, I was telling somebody, the interesting thing about this thing is like, I think people kind of like, definitely people outside the city, like, they don't understand, like, okay, if Brooklyn Beef is different because, as an example, because Brooklyn is a borough.
Right.
Harlem is just a neighborhood.
Like a hamlet. Yeah, it's like
it's mad small.
It's tiny. Yeah.
Like it's tiny. It's not
it's
a
very tiny.
It's a few blocks. You know what I'm saying? Like, so when you have beef in Harlem, it's actually more, I think it's more intense because it's so small and everybody knows everybody. Everybody's just a step or two away.
You can avoid whole parts of Brooklyn. You can't really do that in Harlem,
I
guess.
Yeah, if I got beef with you and you're in Bed-Stuy and I'm in, like, you know, East New York, I could figure it out and kind of duck around it. Yeah, exactly. But in Harlem, ain't no way.
Yeah, no.
You know, so, but it was fun. You know,
it was a good moment for us old New York niggas.
Yeah.
At the same time, during the same week, Fab and Jada dropped the
did y'all listen to that?
No.
I didn't.
I did.
Greg said it wasn't what he wanted. I don't know.
It's not. It's not what you want.
Yeah.
You can tell that they didn't do it together. I think it was the whole like, yo, send me that shit. I'm gonna drop a verse on. Because apparently they've been trying to do this for a long time.
Right.
And you can tell, like, it's probably songs that was sitting around for like 8 months, and Jada probably was like, yo, I'm gonna finally do a verse on it. They weren't. In, you could feel that they were not the in the studio together. Yeah. Nah, it feels kind of copy and pasted. But there's a couple good records on there. I mean, it's worth a listen.
I mean, they can rap.
Yeah, they can rap.
Yeah, both like yeah. They ain't no slouches about that.
Yeah, right. they both rap and a couple,
but they're not feeding off of each other.
Doesn't feel like that to me.
Right.
It didn't feel like that to me. You know, like it felt like it was a good idea, and somehow I don't know why, but it got fucked up. And now it's just like they both kind of need it.
Right.
So it's like we just might as well put that shit out. We both kind of need it. You know.
Got it.
But yeah, I mean, because, you know, peace to New York hip hop, man. I guess it's. We need something.
Listen, every once in a while we need a little something.
Just a little blast. Soul Train Awards.
Yes.
Did y'all watch that?
I did.
I watched.
You watch it?
Yeah.
Okay. So what do we think about
it? No, Sean got the unimpressed.
Yeah, sure. Face. Yeah, what's going on, bro?
I thought, listen, Erykah Badu hosted the Soul Train Awards.
Yeah, that's third year in a row.
I like Erykah. That monologue was fucking terrible.
Right.
Like, it was terrible. It wasn't even remotely funny. It just felt weird. It felt, you know, I don't know, man. Like, I don't want to rail on them because it feels like a fun time. Like, I've been to that. That's what Essence feels like. Like, if you could give a picture of what it feels like when Frankie Beverly and Maze go on stage, it's that.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, for me, seeing some of the acts that they had out there, it was kind of like there was nobody else. Were they just in the lobby? Just grab the niggas and say, yo, what y'all doing later at 5?
I talked to Sydney about it because Sydney was out there. He went out there and moved Kalani around. Mm-hmm. And he said that a lot of acts are just didn't want to do it. They were just turning them down. They didn't see the value in it for some reason.
This is my problem, right? Look, I don't manage SZA. I don't know who that is. You know, I don't know them personally.
I definitely was thinking SZA should have been there.
This is your award show.
Yeah.
We bitch and we complain about never getting recognized, about never getting opportunities. This is your award show, right? And this is why, like, we've had these cycles before where we had the Soul Train Awards, like, before BET Awards,
it was
Soul Train Awards.
Absolutely.
And
Soul Train was
and it popped.
For Bobby Met Whitney.
For them first couple years, it was popping.
Incredible.
Because there were black megastars. Yeah. Black pop megastars.
The biggest show. Michael Jackson did the
biggest
Soul Train
of
Awards.
The biggest stars were black, and they showed up to that shit because they owed a debt of gratitude to Don Cornelius and understood what the institution meant for not only black folks, but music and black music in general.
Culture.
Culture, right? And to me, you know, I understand that they lost a bit of that when Don Cornelius, you know, passed away, and there was not a sort of a line of succession, you know, so to speak. But to me, like, what were you, like, this was your opportunity.
Right.
This was a great opportunity, and you won, and then you're not there.
Yeah.
Like, to me, man, I understand that, you know, look, you might have dates, you might have shows, I understand that, but the Soul Train is the same time like the BET Awards. It's the same time every year in the same place. Yeah. They're not switching all around.
But you know what? That's not just the artist. That's management. That's management not seeing the benefit or thinking that there's something better or looking at what the metrics are and like, oh, but the viewership is only blah, blah, blah. I mean, I'll say this. I love the Soul Train Awards in its more recent iteration, and I went to a taping. I think the last one I went to was 2 years ago, and it was fun as shit. You know, it was so much fun.
It looks fun and there. Fun.
This year, to me, didn't feel right.
It didn't feel as good. Same as the other ones.
It's kind of, but you know what? That's been a theme this year with award shows, and Soul Train is, it's not even just like a Stephen Hill leaving BET thing, but like BET Awards didn't feel right to me. Black Girls Rock didn't feel right to me. This didn't feel right to me. The energy's off. And I don't know if it's the performers or shit not being cohesive or this year just being... But shit's been feeling off.
It's all of that. And I agree with you. The managers do have a part in not sort of seeing the value in that, right? And that is a part of a generational gap. You don't have this... Managers who understood what that institution meant, who understood what being on television in front of that audience, which mm-hmm. is a black audience, on Thanksgiving weekend, you got a shit ton of people there. Like, they don't see things like that. And when you're 24 and you're a man, or you're 27 or 28 and you're a manager, you don't see that.
Right.
You don't get that.
Yeah, but you're right, though. It's like you have a captive audience. Everybody's... that's Sunday night. Everybody obviously had the long weekend. Everybody's got to work the next day for the most part. Right. So people are home watching that. They're watching.
And it's on... Wasn't it on BET?
On BET.
It was on BET and Centric and something else.
Oh, they do it all across all the different ones.
Maybe not all the Viacom channels like they do with the BET Awards, but it was on more.
Well, the black ones.
Yeah. I think also, too, it's interesting that you mentioned, outside of the BET Awards, these are all delayed shows.
Right.
And so they happen, and with social media, you do not feel... It's almost like it's not really the same energy surrounding those shows because of those delays.
Right.
Because the delays are not like, hey, we're going to shoot on Sunday and we'll air it on Monday.
It's like two weeks later.
Yeah, like it was 2 weeks.
Black Girls Rock is like damn near a month.
Soul Train is like 3 weeks. That's the top of November. Wow.
Yeah, you're right.
They taped that the first weekend of November.
You're right.
A long time. And I mean, listen, I don't know what you got to do, but you're in Vegas, my nigga. Like, if you guys can't sell Vegas, so I don't know if they're dealing with budgetary constraints where they're not able to afford to, you know, fly up entire entourages or provide people with the proper grooming and things of that nature. So maybe people are saying, hey, I don't want to do this for free and incur... Right. You know, a $40,000 nut for hotels and you know what I'm saying? So I don't know what the ins and outs of that is, but they definitely need to figure that out.
Yeah. And so for this year's show, I mean, listen, SWB opening the show.
They were great.
They were good. I needed them sequin ass tennis, whatever them skirts was supposed to be.
Ties with the sequin knee brace.
Lily had all that auntie thigh out, boy.
I'm
trying to catch me a youngest.
Yeah, but y'all had on knee length skirts trying to bring back a tennis skirt.
Yeah, you're trying to do the tennis skirt look.
It was so bad, though. Like, these shits is way too, it was awkward, but like bringing out meth, great. You know, that type of thing. And I mean, Tank, I guess, was all right.
The girl seemed to like Tank. He took his shirt off and all that.
The Tony tribute
was weak to me.
It was. Her voice just isn't... First of all, how do you only have one female vocalist for a Tony Braxton tribute? How? Yeah. Like, I don't understand. Like, there's people who can sing. You got Fantasia right there. You could have let Fantasia flip some shit. Like, what is that? And then you could have had... Like, it doesn't have to be somebody in Tony's range, because Tony probably herself did not want Tamar to tribute her.
Tamar's performance, by the way, was a little awkward.
But a lot of people were like, why didn't her sister tribute her? Tamar, at this stage of the game, is a stronger singer than Tony, and she has Tony's same tone, so you don't want somebody to sing your shit better. Especially if you're about to come perform.
Yeah.
But the Tony tribute was like, it wasn't jamming like the God tribute or the Babyface tribute or anything like that. So the Tony tribute was alright, and like, half the show I don't even remember. I'll be honest with you.
I also want to say, man, like, we got to remember that these records are, you know, in some cases 20 to 25 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got 28-year-olds singing 25-year records. True. They did not experience...
They don't know the nuance to it.
So listen, I like Ro James.
Mm-hmm.
Thought he had a great album. You know, I like him. Like, mm-hmm. he was awful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And to me, that's not him, right? Like, that's production. That's a producer. That's someone who is putting together a show and saying, this guy is not right for this.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? If you were doing a D'Angelo tribute, by all means.
Yeah.
You fucking call him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But like Tony Braxton, like it just made no sense. It came out of left field. It didn't even feel like, it just felt weird.
The only one that felt like it made sense to me was Jessie J. And even that was like, again, you got the white girl.
The white gal?
Yeah.
She sounded great.
She sounded great. But again, The one female vocalist you have for a Tony tribute is a white girl?
Yeah, I got you.
Word?
Yeah.
And that's it?
Yeah.
So that felt off to me. And you're right, with Erica's stuff, I love Erica to death, but sometimes her shit just ain't funny.
This year.
It's just not funny.
She wasn't funny this year. She wasn't funny.
Or it's too Erica.
And to me, man, like, you know, just to say it out, like, I wouldn't have given that fat fuck at 1600 any shine. I don't need no jokes about Trump right now. Like, we in our space.
Yeah, fuck him.
Fuck him. Yeah. And honestly, it felt like a cheap, low-hanging fruit joke, man.
Yeah.
And it was just, it didn't even
hit. They did the joke to try to get retweets
and it was corny. It was corny.
Yeah.
Nobody funny, you know, nobody with a fucking sense of humor read that or saw that and said, oh, this is gonna hit.
It's gonna kill.
Right.
Yeah. Nobody, my nigga.
I agree. Nah, show wasn't right this year, man. I mean, you know, I'm gonna watch it next year.
Sometimes
too,
that happens. You know, we're gonna stick with it. Yeah, we're gonna still fuck with y'all. But y'all definitely gotta,
it
looked like y'all started putting this together, you know, around Halloween.
Yeah, last week.
Yeah.
Who all gonna be out here?
See what Eddie LaVert doing.
Right.
Will Eddie Walter come out here? Oh, by the way, this sidebar, I thought it was interesting that T-Pain, I don't know if y'all saw this, he did a couple of tweets yesterday with his lyrics.
Because people finally figured out that.
He was on Jive. He made these records on.
Well, and you didn't know either?
No, I did not know. He said, and then on.
After Buy You a Drink, he says, I'm going to buy you a drink, and then.
Yeah, I'm going to take you home. But everybody thought it was ooh-wee. I swear to God, I thought it was ooh-wee. With me. Because ooh-wee, take you home with me. Right. It rhymes. It's nigga, that's what he said.
What happened, some random person tweeted it. Like, yo, I just found out that this is what he said. And then everybody was like, what? And it went so viral that then T-Pain himself was like, yeah, that's what it says. I mean, I don't really care what you sing as long as, like, you jam into it or whatever.
Yeah, but this is actually what the words
is. And niggas acted like life changed. Like,
I never knew that. And then he did what you call it, the Khaled record.
Oh, no, I missed that.
Yeah, because then he goes, everybody's hands go up, and they stay there, and they say, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say them.
Exactly.
I thought you said, and then they go up, down, up, down. Okay, exactly. Well, that one got me.
He was like,
nigga, that's the auto-tune. We can't hear you.
There it is.
Shit.
Yeah, because forever, I thought it was, and they stay there. Yeah, so I just thought that was kind of cool. Like, you know, he got a little traction for it. Oh, by the way, back to Netflix real quick. I know y'all didn't watch this shit, but I wanted to mention Chris Brown documentary.
Definitely did not watch that.
Bro, I ain't even asked this nigga why you watch shit. It's actually very good. I know y'all never gonna watch it.
Is he honest?
Yes. He's honest.
Yeah, nah.
It's
limited honesty.
He's honest. Okay.
In fairness, a documentary is always going to be slanted and angled.
Yes.
With some, you know, tone. So I understand what you're trying to say.
What I'm trying to say is that he's being honest, but he's...
In the context of the question posed.
And he's obviously spinning everything only from his perspective.
Yes, of course. Yes.
He talks about, you know, obviously they go into the... They talk about everything, about, you know, his childhood and, you know, his mom being, you know, abused and how that affected him. And then, you know, they get into his career and then they talk about Rihanna. And that night, he goes into detail about that night. Mm. And then he goes into detail about, you know, Carucci. And... You know what happened with that, and he's basically.
What does he say happened with that?
He claims that they was on a break.
Oh, he thinks they broke up just because of the baby.
Yeah, he said they was on a break, and then obviously the girl. He said he didn't know the girl was pregnant. She called him like she was way along,
mm-hmm.
and was like, "Oh, yo, I'm about to have this kid, and it's yours." And he's like, "What the fuck is he talking about?" Right. You know. And so when she found out that Carucci was, you know, was distraught and left, but he's like, "Yo, but we was on a break." Like when
they
fucked
got together after that. Look, it's not okay.
But you can tell that Carucci is definitely the one that she's the one who got away. Like she's I think that he still just cannot believe that she never came back.
Right.
He thought, okay, she'll be mad,
and eventually
she'll come back. And she obviously she's not that she's not come back, but she's prospering.
Right.
So he's like, that one really gets to him. He's almost, his attitude is almost like, I ain't even trying to fall in love again, because
right.
every time I fall in love, I get crushed. That's his perspective. Not okay. He has a lot to do with getting crushed.
Right.
But it was good, though. I mean, again, y'all niggas never gonna watch it. Nope. But if you is home on a rainy Sunday, in January or something, you might want to check it out.
I clean my gutters before I watch
that
shit.
Me and Sean do not advocate watching this shit.
Yeah, obviously. Let's talk about Prince Harry and Meghan. Prince Harry got engaged to a black girl, but then this is the controversy. Yeah.
Let's say she is biracial.
But now they're saying it's even more because I guess apparently her mom is half black.
Oh, I don't know. Her mom looks black to me.
She's a quarter. Her mom looks black to me.
Her mom, like a black woman with dreads.
That's what her mom looked like to me. She's a Jamaican black woman with dreads. But,
the funny thing is with the Meghan thing, motherfuckers want her not to be black so bad. Like,
why is that?
The Brits especially are like twisting themselves into all kinds of. And I know that race is a different thing over in London, especially. Mixed race, it's a whole different vibe over there. Whereas over here, usually if you have black, you black.
You black.
They're a little different over there with that. But they're trying really, really hard to not have her identify as black.
What did she say?
She apparently, because I don't pay that much attention to her, and I don't watch Suits, so I haven't paid that much attention to her. But she apparently identifies as biracial, but I've also seen commentary where someone a couple years ago tried to say Meghan Markle is not black, and she was like, my mother and I would disagree. So she also identifies as black.
And she's posted a lot of pictures of her and her mom lately.
But also, I recognize that the American concept of blackness and race is very racial different. Identity is something that European, even Christiana said she didn't really understand. You understand it academically,
mm-hmm.
but until you get here and you live here as a person who presents black, you don't understand.
Yeah, how it's overwhelming. It's
part and how of nuanced it is, like just how embedded it is in
everything.
And black Brits tend to think that black Americans are making a bunch of ado about nothing, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, but no, it's a real thing here, so they can't really understand why we're like, yeah, she's biracial, but she's black. Like, that's cool, because if you're brown, you can't just walk around in the world and be like, I'm white.
At all.
This
world.
Yeah, it really is. It's about how you visibly present.
Mm-hmm.
So, it is weird, and I mean, a lot of people have said, you know, we just got to send her a lot of positive energy and cover her, because the London tabloids are like,
they're vicious.
They are vicious. They are so much worse.
They camping out in front of your crib.
Yeah, they're digging up every fucking salacious.
Yep, they going through your garbage.
They doing everything, so they're gonna be on her ass.
But she's not English, is she?
No, she's American.
She's from here.
But still, she married Prince Harry.
Yeah, I mean,
you know.
It's interesting to me that, again, these is all, what's it called, conspiracy theories, but
right.
Conspiracy theory was, that I've heard and I've always believed, because you know me, I be believing that shit.
You do.
That they killed Princess Di, that I believe that
the royal family set it up?
Killed Princess Di because she was about to marry Dodi Fayed.
Yeah, that's the conspiracy theory.
Yeah, and yeah, of course Dodi Fayed is Muslim.
Yeah.
And you know, very wealthy family, right. And they didn't want. And then the rumor then was she might have been pregnant, and they didn't want a sibling of the future king to be Muslim.
Right. Yes, I know that was long, and I think Dodi Fayed's father even.
Some
credibility to it. The guy who owned
Muhammad Fayed, I believe, is his dad's name.
But the thing with Harry is Harry's not the heir to the throne, so they're gonna let him rock a little bit.
Yeah, but still,
you know, still
for Harry to make this move was kind of like, even though he's not an heir,
yeah,
it's still kind of like, oh, okay, that's ill. That you're gonna.
I mean, listen, modern times have to catch up, even with the Windsors at some point.
You know? I wonder how she feels,
Queen Elizabeth.
I mean, Queen Elizabeth. No disrespect, but she ain't got much longer.
She's like 100. I don't know. This bitch won't die. Like, she's like 100. I mean, she's not, but she's old as fuck. She old as
she's
hell.
She's sniffing 100. She's yeah. She's definitely in her 90s.
She's old as hell. I thought
she hasn't been UFC. You don't see her much now.
No. I did think it was interesting. Megan says she's met her, quote unquote, a couple of times.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was interesting when you get to the point where, like, you're getting engaged and they live on the ground.
Yeah.
And you've met the grandmother a couple of times.
Yeah. So,
you
know?
Yeah.
This is, I mean, you know, God bless them. I hope they, you know, live long and prosper. I just thought it was interesting to see the.
Yeah.
It's so wild. Like, whenever anything happens with the royal family, like, America goes nuts.
Yeah.
It's like, they're not.
Well, because of the idea of a monarchy to us is some fairy tale shit. Like, we yeah. look at that because we understand.
And this is like some coming to America
yeah,
shit.
We understand it through a Disney lens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas for other people, it's a reality. So for us, all that pomp and circumstance and ceremony is very
yeah,
charming.
Like the dress
and fascinating. And in this, but what is surprising to me is that they're getting married in May, which is very soon. And also what's surprising to me because Kate is due at some point in the spring. So, like, having a new baby come and having, like, a royal wedding.
It's a lot going to be popping.
It's a lot. So, first I was like, why are they getting married so long? But, you know.
You think she might be pregnant?
I mean, I doubt it. She'd be showing by May. I don't think so.
Yeah, true.
She'd be definitely showing by
May. True. Well, yeah. Peace to them. You ain't got nothing to say about it, bro?
I mean, you know, look, God bless them. I don't really know much about it. She's going to have to take shit. I mean, she's married into the royal family. Hopefully, her skin is thick enough to deal with it.
Word.
I don't think that's going to stop.
Yeah.
And it's going to be par for the course. I don't, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
what's Charles,
Camilla.
Camilla.
Camilla get drugged every other day.
Yeah.
Every other day.
Yeah.
For the last 20 years.
They're killing her.
Call her ugly, all sorts of shit. And
she in a wheelchair or something now. She can't even walk.
I don't know, but I'm just saying, I mean, this is just a part of.
So yeah. What
like
it is.
You're marrying into something that's clearly and obviously, like, very, very public.
Yeah.
Like, there's no hiding.
Yeah, ain't no way around it.
So I hope you are prepared for all of the niggas in which you are about to be called.
Yeah.
Right.
Every day.
Because it's happening.
Every day.
Yeah.
I want real quick. Did you see this Conor McGregor story?
No.
Mm-mm.
You see it, man? So, Conor McGregor apparently was in a. He's been having some issues in London. I mean, excuse me, London. In Ireland with the Irish Mafia. Or whatever they call the Mafia. Whatever they call it there, the mob.
Yeah.
He's down with some guys from his area. They get busy.
Mm.
But then there's another squad. Apparently, the other squad, they get, like, ultra busy.
Mm.
So, Conor McGregor was in a bar recently and started having some worries, and one of the dudes from the other squad whipped his ass.
Mm.
Of course, because he's a professional fighter.
Right.
Now, apparently, there's, like, a $1 million bounty from that squad on Conor's head.
Wow.
Like, dead ass. Like, yo, somebody bring him to me. I mean, they want him alive, though. So
right.
Bring him to me, you're getting $1 million. So the press is running up on him, and he's like, you know, yeah, I'm right here. Like, it's whatever. So, like, apparently this thing is, like, really, really starting to bubble up. So, you know.
Something about him, I don't know. I'm going to do a little research on that. Because that sounds like he comes off
that
to me.
That sounds like he made it up.
Yes. Yes. It sounds off to me. And I'm not saying that what you read wasn't real. I'm saying he comes off to me like one of them dudes who makes himself Superman.
Yes.
Like when trust me.
I can totally see
him
that.
Having a fight in an alley turns into, by the fifth time he tells that story,
I beat up 60 niggas.
It was 70 niggas in there, and I beat everybody's ass, and I walked out unscathed.
Yeah.
Right. He definitely feels like that dude to me.
Right.
And
right.
This to me is perfect because no one is talking about Conor McGregor, right? Like, so he had the fight with Floyd.
Mm-hmm. Got his paper,
and then that was it. But this makes him dangerous.
Right.
This makes him a bad boy. Remember, when Mike beat the shit out of Mitch Green.
Right.
Like, that We always loved Mike, right? But that shit made Mike mythical.
Yeah,
it was like, yo, because everybody said, like, yo, this nigga was like high on dust. Like,
you know
what that is.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was like, yo, Mike had broken his hand. He was like beating this dude so
bad.
So that's what I'm saying. I think he is taking a bit of a, he might be taking a page out of that book. You know what I'm saying? Like, Conor McGregor is a world famous athlete.
Yeah.
This is not you know, a fucking dope dealer, right. you know, in yeah. a back alley, right? Yeah. Like, give me, I'm bring him to me alive. Yeah. Like, this is not a fucking movie. What are you talking about, bro? Right. You know what I mean? God bless him. You know, I got to read that.
Yeah. I met Roy Jones a couple days ago at the office.
Okay.
Yeah, he
cut an album.
Yeah, he's you know, he's always been around the
record. What, he had a lawsuit?
Nah, he didn't. He had on one hat on. He had on like a leather jacket and like, you know, some dress pants. You know? He was he wasn't fly, but he wasn't. Yeah. He was country,
yeah.
but
yeah,
you
know. Yeah, he country.
But it was cool. I mean, we talked for a while. And
yeah,
shit.
I like Roy.
Yeah, we talked for a minute. We talked boxing and shit. It was good. He's a nice guy. Like you talk boxing, like he going.
Oh yeah, he go. Yeah, you get. Yeah,
he going. Get we have real conversations. So I just, you know, peace to Roy Jones. You know, for coming by the office. So that was Monday. I want to also talk about this Jay-Z interview mm-hmm. that they did for the New York Times with Dean, I think it's Dean Bankette is the guy who interviewed him, who's the executive, I think he's the executive editor for the New York Times.
He might be executive editor for the Arts and Leisure section, because it was specifically for the Arts and Leisure section.
Oh, you sure? I think he's for the executive.
Oh, he might be.
Shit.
I know the interview for the Arts and Leisure section.
Yeah, so Hove did, like, it's like a 30-35 minute interview, and he's talking about, you know, a wide range of topics, of course, you know, the 444 Project and O.J. Simpson and, you know, Beyonce, of course, and his relationship with his wife, his relationship with Kanye, and, you know, what'd y'all think about it?
I haven't listened to the whole thing yet, but as we were kind of talking about on a sidebar before we started taping, I can understand that we're not used to hearing, especially men in hip-hop, express any real vulnerability or any real self-reflection about where they went wrong, especially in the relationships, and especially not in an interview format, not in a way that's not in the song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you might be like, I fucked up, girl, in the music.
Yeah.
But to sit across from somebody and be like, yeah, I went to therapy. My wife saw me cry. This happened, that happened. We haven't heard that from hip hop, right?
True.
Because of that, people are acting like this was Jay on Oprah being Deepak Chopra or some shit like that. Like, it's just
Sunday.
Like, it just, like, was really.
Was that Oprah show Sunday?
The Soul Sunday. Or even, yeah, if it was like Sunday. Oprah back in the day, Oprah. Like, it just. Yeah. The attention to it and the kind of awe of it is really strange to me. Like, I appreciate Jay's honesty. I appreciate his openness, his vulnerability. I mean, he's a fucking grown ass man. That's great. All of this is new. So much of what Jay is doing is new to us, because the grown hip hop star who is still this relevant and this famous and this influential is brand new. Like, Nas is still out here doing albums, but he ain't Jay.
No.
You know what I mean? And LL is still out here, but he's acting. But having a grown ass rapper who's still this influential is new, so mm-hmm. everything he's doing from that stance is new for us. So I get the attention of it. I get the obsession with, like, Jay and Beyonce's marriage and all this other stuff. But there definitely is like the really high praise and oh my god and dissecting of, like, what he's saying and what he's doing and what he's admitting to, which was also happening in 444. But then there's the backlash to that, like, this nigga ain't even saying nothing. And why are we praising him? Why are we praising him for men he cheated on his wife? He could have just not cheated on his wife. And then why? So, you know, there's like those two sides of the conversation.
Yeah. I think I agree with everything you said. I think people are just very, you know, enamored with him.
Right.
You know, he's a charismatic guy in his way. And for somebody like the Dean Bankette cat, who's, I think he said in the interview, he's like 61.
Mm-hmm.
I think that guys like that almost like, oh shit, I get to sit down, talk to Jay-Z, like, it makes me cool.
It makes
It makes me cool. My kids or my grandkids, maybe his age, his grandkids or nieces and nephews will think he's cool because he met with Jay-Z. So I think it's kind of like, you know, an allure to Hov, that seems to, you know.
Because the boomers know who he is.
Yeah.
And what Jay is, ultimately, is a very... It is a champion, successful story of hip-hop.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
From start to finish. independent. Nobody wanted to sign him. Mm-hmm. Came out, did things his way, split with his partner when things got rough, still kept moving, married the princess, you know, like, did all of the, had all of the toys, all of the cars, all of the watches, all, he, you know, bought into this stuff, you know, did the drug thing, did the regular, you know, did the rap thing, then went into different businesses.
Yeah, became successful.
So he is, so he is quintessentially like the sort of blueprint for men of a certain age and of a certain culture to look at, and feel like, okay, that's sort of ideal.
I can can do it too.
Yes, and I think, you know, again, it sort of lends itself to, I think a lot of times, like you said, to your point, Nas, that when, because men so often don't open up, that even the slightest hint of opening up and seeming vulnerable is met with such praise that it's really, it throws everything off to me.
Right.
It's like, I don't really get that he, and I'm saying this not because I wanted him to, but I don't think he's very deep and I don't think he's very open. I think he gives very broad strokes on things that satisfies a hint of the salaciousness that people have for them.
Right.
Because it really... It,
but you think it's like, you think he's not deep, or you think he's being calculated not deep?
It could be both. I don't know him, right? Like, I've been around, we in this room have been around entertainers. We understand them very well. We're not just around them for work. We're also friends with them. Right. So we know very intimate details about them. And we know when, like, that's why we're always quick to say, I don't know, guys.
Right.
Let's hold off on that. Mm. That, you know what I'm saying? Because we understand that not everything you see is what you get. This one lady had a thread today talking about how Jay was holed up in a hotel for a month with the mistress, and the staff was addressing her as Mrs. Carter.
She's making up some shit.
I don't even know. Like, I don't even know where you got that. My point is, I'm thinking like, okay, this must be like a journalist or a blog. Like, this is someone who
got some information.
Who got some information because this is earning them a living, right? Like, this is a part of what they do. But I'm not just like, are you that obsessed that you have to dig that deep? So it's just, it's weird. I get it, right? People are obsessed with it, and I understand.
And people want to dissect. Here's the thing. People want to dissect Lemonade. And a lot of what people are doing, they're dissecting Lemonade and 444. Like, but Beyonce said this, and Jay himself said that, and he said this, and y'all are applauding this. His lyrics said that. Like, if y'all really still think right now we know what the fuck happened with the Carters, if y'all really think we know what happened with the Carters, y'all are so zealous.
And that's what is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And that's what I was saying even when we talked about, you know, like Wendy and Kevin's situation, right? Like, you don't know. You don't know those people's lives.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you motherfuckers talk about, like
it's factual.
Your fucking, your best friend been getting ass beat for 2 years.
Right.
And you ain't know nothing.
Yeah. Right.
How the fuck you know all the details, the intimate details about what the fuck is going on 3,000 miles away with some people you don't know? You don't know them people.
Yeah. Your best friend's husband had a baby outside the marriage.
You got no idea. You ain't know nothing. You ain't know shit.
The baby when he was 16.
But that's what, but I think too, you know, because B is put in on such a pedestal, and because I think that we have, you know, sort of fantasized and fetishized this idea of power couples, right?
Yeah.
And the conversation of you have marriages to build wealth,
right?
And that is a prevalent conversation on Twitter. Mm-hmm. A lot more than I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Building together.
Yes. And goals. And relationship goals. And I always say, man, like, you know, it bugs me out. It's like regular people. They throw a happy anniversary to the Carters, my favorite couple.
Yeah.
And your Aunt Clarice and Uncle Clarence been married 50 years.
They ain't get a card.
They didn't get a call.
Don't want to go to the banquet.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't go to that banquet shit. Class is like, so they goals.
That's what I'm saying, man. It's like there's such a warped, a connection to celebrity
worship.
Yes, that is very very weird. And so I understand why he doesn't want to give very specific details, right? But it also, you know, it also is not very specific details. Right. So I'm not about to, like, go, oh my God, there's this epiphany.
Yeah.
Like, it's good for him. What works for him, works for him, and works for that family.
Yeah.
It may not work for you and yours.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? It just may not.
There's a lot of shit that comes with that. A lot of pressures, there's or that money, they got employees.
No, no, no. And you don't, like, listen, there is a point where it is a closed room, and it is a man and a woman.
Right.
And none of that money shit matters.
Nope.
And none of that employee shit matters. Like, none of that shit matters. And whatever he did, he had to deal with his woman in that room and in that space.
Yeah.
Now, whatever he did, it obviously, I wouldn't say made it better, but it obviously did not make them split.
Right, yeah. Right.
They figured it out.
They figured it out.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Figure out yours.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, everything you said is correct. It's like, you know, people are just fascinated by celebrity. And now with, you know, social media being so prevalent, you know, celebrities, you know, posting pictures on the gram and, you know, and stuff like that. And the gossip, you know, the gossip columns, you know, gossip or whatever. So that kind of drives that engine. So like you said,
like
people,
you know,
people look at these things as, you know, they kind of praise them and look at them as these kind of, you know, fantasy lives.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And don't take into consideration, you know, there's still people.
But and you know, people love to be in the know.
Yeah.
People
love, I heard
they got the tea.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They know this.
Yeah. Because my cousin used to be doing
all that shit.
Used to,
and I mean,
used to
look,
clean the gutters over there.
if that's your bag, like if that's your thing and that's what excites you,
yeah.
God bless. I, you know, whatever, man. But like, half that shit you be reading
it's
is
bullshit.
False.
It's
like
bullshit.
It's gross and
this is
it's
bullshit.
Grossly
yeah.
False.
Get way off. Matt Lauer.
Lord
Jesus. By the way, sidebar. So what did I see today? Hold on now. I saw some shit today about Applebee's. I saw this shit about Applebee's.
Applebee's? What?
I mean, it ain't got nothing to do with my Lauer, but I just gotta bring it up because it made me nervous. Hold on, Applebee's is offering $1
Long Island
iced teas for the rest of the year. For the rest of the year,
it's gonna be like the well liquor, like that shit's gonna be all the way at the bottom of the cabinet.
That's my point. It's gonna niggas gonna be drunk, sick, throwing up, acting a goddamn fool at that
bathtub gin.
Out in the still in the backyard.
Niggas done got their Uncle Charlie bottle of booze.
They gonna be dipping that shit out of the trash can.
Exactly.
$1 Long Island for the rest of the year,
dude.
Nigga, that's craziness.
I'm good on all of those glorified diners.
Yo, bro.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not going, but I'm just scared of what's going. I mean, you remember?
And
we cool, but like, you know, a nigga living out in Des Moines, Iowa, that's the hot spot.
Look, yeah. I'm gonna tell you like this: they better get some extra security.
This is my point.
Yeah.
Is this a good idea? The whole month of December? Is this a good idea?
Yeah.
No.
Well, I know the police be stationed at the Fridays near us.
Do they?
Oh, they be sitting right there, bro.
Waiting on it.
Sitting right there. Get in your car and get the hell on.
God bless that Applebee's uptown closed. Shit, that would have been a disaster. Yeah. Matt Lauer.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Matt Lauer is the latest man.
Well, not the latest, because it changed for your man Russell.
Oh, yeah. Well,
but the accusation came out sooner.
Yeah.
So, wait. So, should we talk about Matt or Russell? We talk about both.
We could do both.
Yeah. I think Matt is the bigger story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Niggas all knew Russell. Because Russell's thing is more. It's coercion, too, but it's more about the chick's age. Matt's shit is much more disgusting.
Okay, let's back burner Matt just for a hot second.
Right.
So it came out today.
The accusation came out a while ago.
But she wrote something, I think, that came today.
This was a different one.
But Russell's announcement that he was stepping down came today.
But Jenny Lamont, when did she write her shit? She wrote something that came today about the evening that Russell sexually
allegedly
sexually
Assaulted.
Yeah, she said she was pressured and felt threatened.
And she was young.
For those who don't know, Jenny, I think it's Lemieux. Is it LeMay or Lemieux?
I don't know.
Lemieux. Her father is Sidney Lemieux. Sidney Lemieux is a very famous movie director.
Yeah.
And her grandmother is Lena Horne.
I didn't know her grandmother was Lena Horne.
Yeah, grandmother's Lena Horne.
Play too much.
Yeah, so
I mean, I shouldn't say that because that sounds like I'm playing favoritism, but still, it's like
when you wrote the thing on text today, mm-hmm. that's why I said if she wasn't who she was, I'd have wanted to play out.
Yeah,
she has such a pedigree in that world. See, I'm trying to do this shit without being foul.
Right.
The way she described the story, and I'm not denying that she felt that way or that it happened that way or anything. Because in the story, she writes several times, I think it was this type of car, but it was a long time ago, I can't remember.
Right, because she's talking about some shit that happened in like the early 90s.
Yeah,
right?
So
91, I believe.
Yeah, so I appreciated the fact that she was like, everything isn't clear. Yeah, as much as I can remember. But the way she described the story, she'd known Russell from being around and, you know, being in the club life and all that shit. And they went to a restaurant, the Indochine, which was a popular restaurant back then. They saw each other. They hung out. He offered her a ride home in the car. She told the driver where she lived. He told the driver, nah, we ain't taking today. He takes her back to the crib. You know, they get out the car. She goes upstairs with him, and then they have sex.
Mm. So you're like, how much was it, how much was it coercion and assault? Did you really feel threatened? Did you really feel?
Yeah, I don't want to say that she didn't feel threatened.
Right.
And I'm not saying that, you should have just ran or something, because I don't know. Yeah. But it was just, which I actually appreciated the fact that she described it the way she described it, because, and actually I was going to ask you about this, Nye, mm-hmm. not from your personal experience, but the way she described it, it sounds like that shit happens to women a lot. It wasn't like Russell like grabbed her, like once they got behind the door, he slammed her down. If I'm looking at it from her description, if I'm looking at it from Russell's eyes, from her description,
you think she's down?
I wouldn't think that.
You would think she's down.
She wanted to give me some pussy.
So okay,
that's what I would think.
So here's what's tricky, right? Here's what's tricky about the conversation about men in power, and here's what's tricky about the normalization of just a certain kind of sexual presumption and privilege on the side of men.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so the whole, if you consented to even go to a hotel room, go to a house, go to whatever time of night, you knew what it was, right? Even women internalize that. So there are plenty of women, damn near every woman I know, at some point or another, it might have been a dude in college that you didn't really want to sleep with. It might have been some other dude. It might have been a first date. Like, has gotten tired of trying to say no and do whatever and just been like, fuck it. Or the nigga just wasn't taking no for an answer. It wasn't violent. You might not have felt scared, but you just really saw no out, right? And or there could be a feeling of guilt where it's like, fuck, I'm here.
I'm in a damn room.
And you yourself almost think like it's partially your responsibility. So I don't know if I say that is assault if there was not a no. If there was not a...
In her story, she said she didn't say
but let
no.
Me say, but let me just add too.
Right.
Okay.
Because when I actually didn't read it. I actually listened to that article.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't know.
So it might have been a little different for me.
Yeah, nuance could have been different.
Yeah.
So in the article, she specifically says she is fine when she gets in the car. Because she's thinking, I know Russell. Russell's going to take me home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She says, he says no.
Okay.
In a forceful way.
Yeah.
When he tells the driver no.
When she says, I live on Second Avenue,
and then she says very specifically, she said, the door is locked.
Okay.
And she said it sounded like it was like an echo. Like the way she's describing this.
Yeah. Like some old doors.
It was like surreal. Mm-hmm. Like, no. And then she said, the person that I was then looking at was not that Russell that I had been hanging out with or that Russell that I had known.
Right. And also keeping in mind that she's so much younger than Russell.
Yes. So
there's the power.
This is at the time she's what, 23, 24 years old, right? Then she describes specifically not knowing if the driver was an ally, meaning if I yell, if I resist, is this person going to help me or make it worse?
Right.
And so when you, I think maybe listening to it on the Pocket app, which is what I did, it really resonated to me. She also described, she said that they did not go in the regular way in the building.
Yeah, oh, she that's just said, I forgot about
she
that
She said
part.
They went through like a back thing where the guy had, where the driver had gotten out of the car. So she said again, she said, you know, she's a little overwhelmed, right? She's there with these two men. Obviously, they're physically bigger than her.
Because at that time, the driver worked for Russ.
Yeah, at that time, Russell was heavy. Like, he's not the little skinny guy. He's probably, you know, still getting high.
Yeah.
You know, and so they're sort of like, not barricading her, but they're sort of jostling her into the building quickly.
Yeah.
So I can totally understand her rationale of, oh shit, what is happening? And
how I have no choice but to come.
And I don't know if this is going to turn violent.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's her, she, I think she even says as much, like, she was afraid that at some point it would have gotten violent. And at that point, I think she was saying, like, it was just about figuring out how to get
out of here. And I think that's another point, too, is like, you end up in a situation with a dude that maybe, like you said, you thought you knew, you don't know. I mean, there's so many different ways that this can play out. There is, you're with the dude who you think y'all are just chilling, and then he makes moves on you, and it catches you so much off guard that you don't know what to do. There's this situation where you thought you trusted somebody, and then the tables turn, and you're at a disadvantage, so you feel like you just kind of have no choice but to go along with whatever. Or like you said, you just don't want to cause static.
Like, yeah, you just go with the flow.
You just go with it. You don't want it to be a thing. And you know, or other situations, like, you even feel responsible yourself, like, well, I came here, I don't know if I have a right to say no, or I said no so many times, fuck it, let me just go ahead and do whatever. And the thing with a lot of these scenarios is that until very recently, a lot of women wouldn't have thought this was any kind of assault. This was any kind of
that was my thing.
This was any kind of, a lot of women were just like, This is just what it was. Like, okay. I know women who have literally said no. Like, y'all know these stories. Like, chicks like, no. Niggas like, nah, just let me put the head in. Like, I've been in one of those situations where, like, you're making out with a nigga. I was making out with a nigga, and I was like, y'all, and this is like when I was in my early 20s. I was like, y'all, I'm really not trying to sleep with you, fam. Like, we can, you know, we can play around. We can do everything. But, and the nigga is literally, what I'm saying, they're trying to stick his dick in. And you know what I mean? It's like, but some women would have just finally been like,
I'm literally like, no.
Like, I had to push him off of me, and it didn't get violent. But this is what I'm saying. Like, niggas do not listen. He's like, nah, I hear you. I hear you. But literally trying to put it in. I'm like, nigga, nah.
Yeah.
You know?
Or
just let me put the head in. Or just let me do, like, all of that. No. No. I mean, and there's so many women, girls.
I thought her article was really interesting because it was the first article I've read. I'm sure there are others, but the first article I read where it was that. She wasn't like, Russell, you a fucking piece of shit. Right. It was kind of like, yo, that night was really crazy, really bothered me. I'm not saying she took blame for it, but she was just kind of like, what the fuck happened?
She was also sort of countering his dismissal of the other young woman's charge.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, because what he said was he had never done that.
Yeah. So the other young woman's charge was that she was, what, like a teenage model or something?
She was like 17 or something like that. Yeah. He basically, like, had sex with her, and, like, Brett Ratner was there. And, like,
she looked at Brett and told, like Brett help also, me. Like, help me, and Brett was just like, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, listen, I'm not here to, you know, sort of, you know, protect Russell in any sort of way, but I just want to give some context.
That Russell was a modelizer who fucked with young girls?
Russell in 1991 is 180 degrees from the Russell you see now.
Yeah.
Russell was, and he will tell you,
hard partier.
hard partier. Coke he was head. A rock star.
Coke head, yeah.
He was.
Yeah.
He lived the life of a rock star. It was
not
fucking,
a father yet. Yes. I mean, not that that should matter, but
yeah. No, he was not settled down. Yeah. He was not a father. Yeah. He was a fucking rock
He's
star
out every night.
But yeah, he like, was not Uncle Rush.
Yes, yeah. like Def Jam was making a kajillion dollars right. a year, right? He was a rock star. Russell was. Like all the puffy shit was that nigga Russell was doing all of that.
He just wasn't doing it on TV.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. We didn't have sort of celebrity gossip in the way you have now.
Yeah.
And hip hop had not gone so mainstream at that point that it was just that popular, right? Yeah. But yes, like these niggas party every night.
Every downtown
what they did.
Club, every whatever.
Every one of them. Yep. Every,
and like, Russell fucked all the models.
Stories for days. Yep.
All
stories
the models.
For days.
Until they got to New York.
So, this was a very... And like I've said before, I think the conversation is important, but the conversation... Not but. The conversation regarding sexual assault and what we see as the line being inappropriate.
Right.
Has shifted drastically in the last 5 to 7 years.
Yes, like massively.
Like there, like that's what I'm saying. For a 30, because Russell's at that point, he's what 35,
right. maybe.
He's 35 years old,
maybe.
For 35 year old man in 1991. He's absolutely thinking
it's mine.
That's what I
it's
you know
what it is.
And because no one has ever told me well. In their minds, no one has ever told them no.
Right. Yeah.
Right? They've never not.
This is what I do.
This is what I do.
What
because
what's
she's
talking about?
Because
why are you living?
Because he didn't. And when you listen to the end part, right, is also very telling because she says, like, she just got up and she was like, he didn't even, like, take her downstairs.
Yeah,
like,
right. I
got up and got a cab.
Deuces, yeah.
Which to me says, I didn't really do, like, this is normal behavior.
So I
didn't do anything wrong here.
And I do, but so. You bring up a good point, Sean, because this is the other thing about the allegations that are coming out about certain people, not about like a Matt Lauer that we're about to talk about. But when we're talking about what a man did 20, 30 years ago, a man who, to Sean's point, was like in a very different space in his mind, a very different type of personality, under the influence of drugs, just a whole different lifestyle and person. My concern in this quick, like, get them all out of here conversation is that it leaves no room to discuss evolution of thought, recognition.
You mean from the men?
From the men. Evolution of thought, recognition, and understanding over time of boundaries and right and wrong, to account for the evolution of public consciousness about consent, right? Mm. Because, you know, you got plenty of people who used to beat their wives, you know, 50 years ago, too. But everybody thought that was okay back then. You know, everybody's all of a sudden like, he beat my grandma.
She was in sitcoms. It was Ralph Kramer being like, why? Order? Like, you know what I'm saying? It was like normal.
I've even been watching, like, I've been watching a lot of, over the holidays, I was watching a lot of TV One reruns. So, like, old Fresh Prince, old Cosby, old Different World. You'd be surprised how many just little things in there couldn't fly today. Mm-hmm. That was on some that people be like, that's sexist. That's this, that's that. You know what I mean? Like that type of thing. So I think that, so with Russell, absolutely the story should be told. And there's probably a bajillion other stories about that, about Russell, but about a whole lot of other niggas in New York at that time too, because yes, there was the idea that if you have money,
you was popping.
And chicks was up under you and around you, it was understanding that you might be fucking.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why are you here? Why are you at my table?
Yeah.
Why are you at the
club?
You
know what it is.
Why are you in my car? Why are you coming to breakfast with me? And I'm saying, yes, no. We all understand that should not be the assumption. That shouldn't. But in a certain lifestyle,
it is.
That was how it went down, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't just the men who thought like that. It was the women who thought like that. Like, I talked about this the other week when I think about coming up in the Freaknik era. Like, all kind of shit used to happen that can't happen right now. And it wasn't just the men and the women being freaked out. A lot of women were just like, you know, it just was what it was. So I worry about not allowing there to be space for, I did that shit 30 years ago and it was fucked up. I was coked out of my head. That was how I got down back then. understand things differently now.
Look at things differently.
And for you to have to pay consequences now with interest on some shit you did 30 years ago.
Yeah, Russell left all, he stepped down from all his companies.
I think,
you know, listen, I understand.
And that's not to cape for Russell. I'm just saying it's...
Yeah.
It's the a conversation, more complicated conversation.
Yes, I was gonna say the conversation has to, in my opinion, the conversation has to be nuanced, because what I also feel now is that we are having a very extreme conversation, right? And we're ultimately sort of, for lack of a better term, we're sort of throwing the baby out with the bathwater,
right?
And we have instances that are bad and sort of on that teetering borderline of, okay, was that not okay, or yo, that wasn't really cool, and then you have the fucking the Weinstein shit, the extreme shit.
You had the real predatory shit.
Yes,
and yes, Russell was a modelizer.
Oh yeah,
Russell went for the young girls, but I mean, and that was his thing. But the other thing is that older rich men going for young girls was a thing back then. And like
it's a thing now.
It's a thing now. You don't think, you know, Mr. Clarence tricking off his little Social Security? You need your Metro PCS page.
Little Tamika.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So part of it is kind of like, it's not like a Weinstein thing where, you know, niggas, like, not all of these instances are like Weinstein where there were like multiple settlements and people getting fired and people getting hush money and, you know, non-disclosure agreements, like that kind of thing. Some of this is just, yo, it's a different time. It was the lifestyle. And it was open activity because this was okay then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this was okay then. Not saying it should have been.
But it was.
But social norms were different.
And
now it's not, but you can't hold, but like holding somebody responsible for what social norms are now, for behavior to happen when social norms were different, to me, it's tricky.
It's a slippery slope.
Yes.
It's a slippery slope.
So Matt Lauer, on the other hand.
Right. Matt Lauer was fucking
was wild. So he got fired yesterday.
Day before yesterday.
From his job on the Today Show.
He was, like, in the middle of the night.
Yeah, he was making $28 million a year.
Which is crazy.
I think that's just flat salary. That ain't even bonuses and all that.
The most prominent personality on NBC.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the biggest star on the network.
Yeah.
It came out that he had been...
Well, first they called it sexually inappropriate behavior.
Yeah, but apparently he'd been doing this for a long time.
Both Variety and the New York Times were working on stories about him.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay. Yeah, so both Variety and the New York Times have been working on stories about Matt for a couple months. And because a lot of people were surprised that NBC fired him in the middle of the night after one complaint was filed. And when they fired him, the statement was, even though there's only been one complaint filed, we have reason to believe that this is... There have been more instances.
But you know what's wild?
Well, after that statement came out, a lot of journalists were like, because y'all motherfuckers know these stories were in progress.
Yeah.
Had been investigating, from what I read, there was a two-month investigation. Because the first thing that popped into my head was, you do not fire a $25 million a year person without hard ass evidence. This is definitely not a one time thing.
Yeah.
And yes, they definitely knew and they definitely brushed it. This is probably the first formal complaint that can be tracked.
Yeah.
Meaning they might have had hard files that got lost, or so and so's complaint never really went through the HR.
Mm-hmm.
They never pushed it up the flagpole or whatever. So this was probably the first time, and because of the climate, that's really what this shit is about.
Yeah.
Because if this was last year, we probably don't even hear about this.
Yeah. What's interesting to me is, okay, so now we have just off the dome: Charlie Rose, Bill O'Reilly, Matt Lauer, Richard Dreyfuss. I feel like I'm forgetting some others.
I think it's important, too, to give a little differentiation, because I feel like that's what's happening with the baby in the bathwater.
They're lumping everything
it's
together.
Because when you say Charlie Rose did this shit, and again, I'm not defending him.
Right.
But the shit they're saying Charlie Rose did was 30 years ago.
Oh, I thought it was recent.
It was recent. No.
From what I read,
this way he pulled his dick out last year.
But it was pretty.
Like the other day?
Yeah, but it was a lot.
Oh, Oh, nigga.
Yeah, Charlie.
But it was a lot.
Charlie.
No. Yeah, and I'm not defending it.
No. It was recent. Okay. I mean, yes. All right, apparently, like that, he's been doing this for a long time.
I'm wrong. That's why he has never stopped.
Very believable. Yeah. I give him a pass. So
my point to that was though, and again, there's others that I'm just blanking out on. It's like these guys, more than likely, it's. Okay, as a scumbag as he, and I'm totally not capable of this total piece of shit. But when I say Donald Trump saying all this slick shit about them.
Like, Jesus Christ, man.
But you know why he's saying it? Because he knew.
Yeah.
Because they're all moving together.
Yeah.
They're all playing golf together. They're all going to these country clubs together. They're all having these conversations.
Right.
About, yo, I caught a young one the other day. That's why he's saying slick shit, because he knew about Matt Lauer and right. Charlie Rose them, because he's a piece of shit, and he's doing the same thing.
They share stories, yes. And they talk, and they, you know, they're all members of the same country
the
club.
Same, exactly,
like that.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean...
On the same skiing trips and all that bullshit.
And I mean, all of this is very believable. I mean, when you start to really get into the meat and potatoes of the Matt Lauer and, you know, the secluded office...
Apparently, a lot of executives have that. Somebody rushes the building.
I said that, and I tweeted that out. Him having a door that can lock from the inside is just protecting him. Not crazy to me.
Yeah.
But apparently, a lot of the executives who have it use it as an intimidation tactic. So, you come into their office and you're standing in front of the desk, and they press the button.
Yeah, now you can't get out.
Yeah.
But Matt Lauer was just pulling his dick out and just telling old girl to come.
But then
girls dildos. My thing is my again. I ain't never made no $25-30 million a year, so right. I'm sure it flips your brain in all kind of other ways. He's made this money for a long time too. But hey, at my job right now, I'm very pleasant. I say hi to all the girls,
right.
But I keeps it. Clean.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, hey, ain't no hugging, ain't no extra, none of this. So, when I'm hearing about this dude, like, giving out dildos as gifts and then
being like, this is how I want to use it on
you? Yeah, I'm like, my nigga, like, what?
Or even that clip.
You at the job, my dude.
Or even that clip of him talking to Meredith Vieira.
I just saw
that
today.
Meredith Vieira, by the way, like, not that anything about any news anchor gives off sexy and saucy, but Meredith Vieira is not like, she, like, nothing about her was ever like tight clothes,
boom. Yeah.
Like, she's not even like, I don't know, I can't even explain. Like, she's so, to me, she was always so just like plain and mom and whatever.
Did you see the clip
and
of
when
him
he's
and
like, yo, is that a new sweater? He's like, yeah, keep leaning over like that. That's a good view. And then immediately, like, face changes because the camera's about to go live. Like, it's crazy.
Did you see the interview with him and Sandra Bullock?
No, I didn't see that one.
They posted that, and, like, I forget what movie she had put out at the time, but she had a nude scene. Mm-hmm. So he's like, yo, welcome back. Yo, I seen you naked. And, like, the whole joint,
right.
Like, he keeps bringing that shit up. She's slick with it, though. She's, like, polying with him, but he keeps bringing... But he basically, you know, you could tell, he basically like, yo, if I could bag...
Like, what's up?
Yeah, like, what's up? It's like, yeah, this is... They were live on there on the Today Show.
And who was the other clip where somebody was on Watch What Happens Live, one of the other anchors, I can't remember her name, is escaping me
right
now.
Was it the one
who
got fired?
No, and then he says something like, you know, Matt Lauer, you had to say...
Right.
And she says... he pinches my ass.
Right.
Wow.
Like, right. Dude, like this was like.
I'm saying, you at the job.
But also,
you grabbing ass at the job.
So a couple.
Pull your dick out at the job.
It came out that Matt Lauer was actually a dick. Like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, something like that. Because, you know, for a long time he was supposed to be like America's man,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, he's
like
a great
during the
guy.
Where in the World was Matt Lauer era. But I want to say it was around the time that Katie Couric left. That yes. It came out that, like, actually he's an asshole.
That's
what
it was.
That's who it was.
It was like, actually he's an asshole.
And then right after that's when he had the clash with Ann Curry.
Right, and got Ann Curry fired. Yeah. So it's not like we didn't already know, like, okay, so Matt Lauer was an asshole. But this seems extreme. So then your man Geraldo.
This nigga here
is talking about, like, I believe that for, you know, sexual assault accusers, there should be, like, these contingencies, like, A, it needs to have been within, like, 5 years, and B, there has to be somebody who, like, he got this whole list that he's running down. Then this nigga's like, and the news is such a flirty business it's such a flirty business. Like, how else would you explain, you know, marriages that came out of newsroom that have lasted for so long? So he's really trying to advocate, like, you can't tell us we can't, like, fuck around. And I was like, and Fox was immediately like, we don't know what that nigga talking about.
I mean, we ain't so he got some shit about to come out.
Well, so it has come out now today. Bette Midler, actually, Bette Midler didn't say it, but somebody unearthed an interview. This is how much, guys, this is how much the conversation has changed. Someone unearthed an interview that Bette Midler did with motherfucking Barbara Walters, like 20 years ago. This is an actual on-air interview where she specifically said that Geraldo and his producer shoved her in the bathroom, put poppers, like the smelling salts joints, under her nose and felt her up aggressively.
Wow.
This was an on-air interview with Barbara fucking Walters and Bette fucking Midler, who was already a motherfucking megastar. Somebody unearthed the interview and brought it back out. So I was like, okay, there y'all shit go. So now it's probably going to be some more shit coming out on Geraldo. Yeah, but it is true. Like, the news, like, any male-dominated industry has some disgusting shit going on.
Yeah.
And this is what people really need to be aware of. Like, there are very few men that they could put up there and just a simple, he grabbed me, he groped me, he said something inappropriate would surprise me. The kind of Matt Lauer level shit, there's that would surprise me a lot of people.
You know what? And and your job too. Your job too. You want to know why Charlene ain't never got work Saturday?
Because she don't want to work with you.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, all that shit. It's your job too, nigga. 4 to 12
at the Target. Happening with the COs and all that.
All of that.
Shit.
All of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I just, you know, it's
and there's so many dudes who are now like, oh, so the moral here is like never work with women. That's what y'all take out of shit.
Don't speak to a woman.
It's fascinating. That's what y'all take away. It's fascinating because I've always said how you treat people isn't about how or what they're willing to accept. Like, it's such an indication of who you are. Like, if you can treat people like that, like knowingly be harmful to people, like willingly and actively be harmful to people, it's really, it's such an indication, man, of your fucking lack of character, like the scum bucket that you are, man.
And you coming into the office and making this shit fucked up for other people.
Just to do it.
I mean, obviously, we don't think this is anywhere near the last of people that's stuff that's going to come out.
Oh, no.
There's a lot of motherfuckers right now hoping for Christmas break.
Quickly. Yeah.
And hoping for this shit to die down.
Because I said this before. Granted, the Russell shit broke. But the Russell shit broke because, like you said, because of who that person is.
Mm-hmm.
The music industry and the urban music industry specifically is going to be the last damn to break. I really believe that. Because there's too many of us who don't want to throw our own people under the bus. Yeah. And
she says that.
Judy
LaMette,
There's so many of us who don't want to throw our own people under the bus. And not only that, I still believe that if motherfuckers come out against certain people in the music industry, they might be made pariahs by their peers. Like,
Really? You will be.
Yeah, like, come on, nigga. Really? You have no, what you trying to get some dough? You know what I mean? Like,
up, son.
Yeah, so especially if you're still working again.
And we come from we have grown up, we've grown up in a no snitching culture.
Yeah, so we're gonna obviously just keep an eye on it.
And I'll call my cousins.
Exactly.
Right, I'll just get somebody.
Yeah, why you ain't got? No snitches. Call your people from uptown and see if they gonna come to handle their business.
Yeah.
So that's it. We back.
Yep.
And it's a wrap. And we'll see y'all next week.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @Pop Life Podcast. Talk to you next week.